This is Ian Martin.
And this is Sadie Witkowski.
And today we're exposing the truth behind 5G.
Which, it turns out, is more math than mystery and conspiracy.
Welcome to Carry the Two, a podcast from the Institute for Mathematical and Statistical Innovation, a.k.a. IMSI.
This is the podcast where I and my co-host Ian talk about all the unexpected ways that math and statistics impact our lives. And it can be particularly unexpected for us, seeing as I'm a cognitive neuroscientist and Ian teaches high school choir. But with my experience in science journalism and Ian's endless curiosity, I think we make up for it in spades.
Wait, so we're only going to do math? Are we not going to talk about all these conspiracies? You know I love a good conspiracy theory.
Well...
So many times people come back to me about the fact that you have a chipset on your brain and 5G is going to control that. You can't imagine the number of questions. So definitely it's totally silly. It's totally about conspiracy. And of course it doesn't make sense.
Today's guest expert, Merwan Deba, has almost certainly heard them all. He's a professor at Centro Supelnek, and he is the chief researcher at the Technology Innovation Institute in Abu Dhabi.
So then why is he getting all these conspiracy questions?
Well, Merwan's research focuses on random matrix theory, learning algorithms and communication sciences, and optimization game theory. I know that might seem like a bunch of technical jargon, but that's all to say his work is in the wireless communications field, and he has lots of practice explaining the math behind our cell phones and the challenges we still need to face to improve the technology. Did I mention he's already started working on 6G?
As of today, many people, and I'm one of them, are starting to do research on what we call 6G, by the way. And this is something that is forecasted to be deployed in 2030, with the time frame around 2050. And what is 6G about? Well, we're trying to look at how to connect mobile from machines.
Okay, I think we're putting the cart before the horse here. I don't even know what the G stands for in cell phone networks. Like, I'm still working with LTE.
I won't lie. I've seen like a million YouTube commercials for phones talking about 5G, and I never knew what it meant.
Okay, good. I'm glad to know I'm not alone here on this journey.
Yeah, but it's actually incredibly enlightening to talk with Merwan and just have him walk me through all the different generations. And that's what the G stands for, actually. Generations.
Cellular networks have been going through what we call generation. So generation or time frame of roughly 20 years, most people know about 2G, which was mostly about a generation which provided what we call mobile for voice. That started in 1990 and lasted until 2010. And many of the 2G generation, I would say cellular networks, are now closing down. Of course, they're not closing down at one step, but progressively. Then in around 2000, 3G came in and with a time frame of around 20 years from 2000 to 2020. We still have 3G networks at the moment, and some are getting shut down at the moment. And mostly the idea was to provide what we call mobile for data, being able to browse and download basically kind of data. And I think that was a good trend because that, of course, kicked off all the technology behind smartphones and all things like that. Around 2010, we decided to deploy a new generation called mobile for the internet, and that's basically 4G. It started in 2010. It's progressing very rapidly, and it will go until 2030, this 20 years time frame. As you can see, generations are basically overlapping.
Okay, cool. So then what about LTE?
That stands for long-term evolution, and it has that name because cell phones in general were just such a big leap forward.
Okay, so then after LTE, we have HG, which is a different generation, and that's basically mobile for, like, fill in the blank.
Yeah, we went from mobile for phone,
2G,
to mobile for data,
3G,
to mobile for internet,
4G.
And now we're in this overlapping period where 5G is coming online, so to speak. And 5G really started in 2020, which is probably why it got so tangled in all those weird COVID conspiracies. But it's starting to pick up steam now.
And at the heart of 5G is mobile for things, meaning basically the possibility to connect a massive number of objects. And this is what we call the IoT. IoT means Internet of Things. And the ability to connect so many devices is not so easy in the sense that in general, when you have many people talking at the same time, you have a problem with what we call interference because everybody talks at the same time. So you need basically to be able to connect massively a certain number. And the kind of massiveness that we're talking is roughly around 1 million objects per kilometer squared. So that's quite huge.
Does he mean like a million different objects all trying to connect at the same time, like phones or whatever?
Phones, smart toasters, just think of everything that's connected to Wi-Fi these days.
Wait, so why do we need to connect so many things to this Internet of Things?
Well, think about it. All the new technology that's a part of our lives these days.
If you look at it, given robot, basically, the iRobot, typically, it's around 1,000 sensors. So just a robot is 1,000 sensors. So you can imagine the number of sensors that are going in. And I think the amount of things which is which we enable to be connected is a big revolution in our industry, in the sense that we're going to have cars which are going to be connected by 5G. We're going to have robots which are going to be connected by 5G. You're going to have houses, connected fridges, which are going to happen. And I think this is a big transition that we're seeing from 4G to 5G.
Okay. So I think I have a handle on the different generations. I'm assuming this is the part where you jump in and tell me about some super complicated math that makes all this work.
You've caught on to my evil plan. But even if the math does get complex, I think you're going to enjoy this. Let's take a quick break and then we'll get into the math, aka mean field games, and how we can keep a network running with so many connected agents.
Okay, cool. Sounds like a lot.
If you're enjoying this show and learning about the important research, here's another University of Chicago Podcast Network show that you should check out. It's called 9 Questions with Eric Oliver. Have you ever wondered who you are but don't know who to ask? Then join Professor Eric Oliver as he poses the 9 most essential questions for knowing yourself to some of humanity's wisest and most interesting people.
Okay, mean field games. What's that? I'm a little scared because it sounds like middle school PE, and that was not my favorite thing in the world.
Not quite. Wikipedia defines mean field game theory as the study of strategic decision-making by small interacting agents in very large populations. I'm just kidding. I'm not going to read a wiki article to you.
Good, because I was going to start to question your sources. If my students aren't allowed to quote Wikipedia, neither are you.
Okay, fair. Mean field games, or mean field game theory, is more like an extension of what we think of as classic game theory. So did you ever have like a logic or math class where you had to talk about the prisoner's dilemma?
The only thing that comes to mind when you say that is the Stanford Prison Experiment. And honestly, that was a pretty mean field game.
Boo! But like, actually, as a cognitive neuroscientist by training, I have some real issues with that experiment.
Yeah, I heard things about that were not exactly above board. Okay, so what is the prisoner's dilemma then?
In the prisoner's dilemma, you have 2 criminals who have been caught and are each being interrogated by the police separately. The cops in this scenario are trying to get them to rat on each other. And you have 3 basic outcomes. If one prisoner gives up their compatriot, then they both get prison time, but the rat gets substantially less. If they both turn on each other, they both have quite long prison sentences. And finally, if neither turns the other in, they both get off scot-free.
So moral of the story, never tell the cops anything and never talk to them without a lawyer present.
Well, the point of the setup is that each person is trying to guess what the other will do and make a decision accordingly. If you think your partner will snitch, it's better for you to fess up as well so that you don't get stuck with all the punishment. But this is just 2 people trying to guess what each other will do. Think how complicated this becomes when you have more than just 2 players.
The only issue that you have with these techniques is that in general, well, in terms of mathematics, you tend to understand quite well how you could basically model a system where you would have 2 intelligent entities. But when the problem is that when you have many, that's in general the big problem. The problem of scaling comes down, and then you don't really understand what is the right way, how you could do it. Because whenever you have more than 2, you have it in physics, the 3-body problem and other things, you have much more combinations which can happen, okay? Because you can cluster stuff. You can have groups which happen.
3-body problem? Doesn't sound like a problem to me.
There's actually a pretty popular science fiction book by this name, but it historically refers to understanding the physics problem of how the sun, Earth, and moon's orbits are influenced by each other's gravity and how to model that.
Okay. But Marijuana is looking at problems that deal with even more than just 3.
Right.
And then you can decide that, you know, within groups, you have some kind of cooperation which happens. And instead of doing basically each one modeling, you have within a cluster that they exchange data to create a kind of clustered model, stuff like that. So the number of combinations that can happen increases. And then to be able to understand what would be the best strategy, that's where things get a bit difficult to handle.
Okay, so he's basically saying that the more actors you have, the more complex the interactions become. And so then to deal with that, scientists use mean field games?
Yeah, it's basically a mathematical system that allows you to predict what a bunch of players or actors will do based on how all the others are acting, which is a far cry from our simple prisoner's dilemma example. You see this kind of mathematical modeling a lot in all sorts of different contexts, from how schooling fish behave to understanding big financial markets. In fact, do you remember our episode with Dario Basso?
The bee guy?
Yeah, him. So I actually first heard about his research modeling honeybees when he was visiting MC for a workshop called Application of Mean Field Games.
Yes, I love a callback. Okay, so before break, we were talking about math behind cellular networks. So I'm guessing Marwan uses mean field game theory to do something with cell towers or networks?
Yeah, MFG, or mean field games, basically provides a big picture framework to understand how competing users who all want to access the network interact with each other. And of course, the real problem occurs with an increasing number of people who are all trying to access the network.
Okay, so it works fine normally, except like when people are all trying to download a TV show before they get on a flight.
Yeah, or like going to a super crowded music festival. Remember those?
Yes, we love them. Okay, so I get how mean field game theory is important for modeling cell networks, but we started talking about 5G. Are we going to get back to that?
Right, let's explore the technological leap of 5G right after this short break. If you're enjoying the important research shared on our show, there's another University of Chicago Podcast Network show that you should check out. It's called Entitled. Human rights matter, but conversations about rights can be polarizing, confusing, and frustrating. On Entitled, lawyers Claudia Flores and Tom Ginsburg traveled the world getting into the weeds of global human rights debates. They use that expertise to explore the stories and thorny questions around why rights matter and what's the matter with rights. Subscribe to Entitled, part of the award-winning University of Chicago Podcast Network. And we're back. So let's go back to 5G, which, as you remember, is...
Mobile for things.
Yep, that's right. And part of the reason we started moving into 5G, into mobile for things, is because we now have smarter phones that can handle more complex computing locally, which means not every single sensor in your smart toaster has to connect to the grid.
We've been seeing a big trend these last 2 years of a lot of manufacturers trying to build basically AI directly on the device. And now you have a lot of phones which are sold on the market, on which you have now basically chipsets, on which you can run machine learning algorithms directly on the device and out of the cloud. So that was a big revolution.
Is this a dig at my dad who still uses an iPhone 5 and whose charger is held together by duct tape?
Not really. Although using an old school phone does mean you're not taking advantage of the full network. Besides cell phones, there are plenty of other needs for local processing where relying on moving data back and forth between the phone and the cloud doesn't work because of a time delay.
You can't be connected to the cloud. It takes too much time. The typical example is the car. I mean, if you look at the car, basically, when you start having some kind of reaction that you need to take, things have to go extremely fast. So things have to be processed locally. And me as humans, we're quite efficient in that point of view, okay? And so what I mean by that, if you take typically a car, as of today, on a 4G network, basically, if you decide to connect yourself to the cloud and go back, well, if you're running at 100 kilometers an hour, by the time you signal that you want to break and goes the information back to the cloud and comes in to have basically the design, it would take you up to 3 meters before you break. So that's typically the kind of accidents that you can have. So things have to be done locally and a decision has to be taken locally.
So here's another reason it's so important to have these updated cellular networks for more than just downloading cat videos faster.
Hey, sometimes I'm doing important things on the internet, like watching drag queen videos.
Okay, but let's go back to the problem of having lots of smartphones with powerful local processing that are now all competing for resources. In other words, they're all fighting to get on the network with the best signal.
So even if you have phones doing smart processing like on their own, they still need to communicate on the network. And to be honest, I have no idea how that works.
Yeah, when I first spoke with Marwan, I basically just knew my phone talked to a tower and I had no sense beyond that. Thankfully, he was able to explain it to me.
Today, when you have a network and I want to make a call, okay? Well, in general, you need to go through what we call a base station, an antenna. That your base station is narrow the tower that you have around you. So when you make a call, it goes through the tower. And in general, the tower decides who's going to be making the call. So if you have many people who call at the same time, so you're all taking your phone, there's a central entity that tells you start, and then you start, and then you start, so there's no interference. Just like in the classroom, you have your teacher and tells you, you're going to talk first. So if everybody in the class wants to talk at the same time, well, there's a teacher saying, okay, you shut down and you talk, and that's how it's done. And then it tells the other, oh, he wants to talk to you, so you go through him. Now, the drawback of such a system of centralized is that, of course, it's not resilient to basically attacks. What it means that is if you kill basically or you destroy the base station, then basically the whole network breaks down.
Wow. Okay. So I assume there are like people making sure these towers are protected?
We can neither confirm nor deny. No. I can't speak to the national security of our cell towers, but unsurprisingly, there's a lot of research money coming from folks like DARPA. That stands for the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, because cell towers are so integrated into all sorts of things. I mean, it doesn't even have to be an attack. Just think about a natural disaster knocking out a few towers and suddenly the network goes down. That can have disastrous results.
So how can we make these systems more resilient?
Well, one way is to make them less centralized so that losing just one node won't take the whole thing down.
I would say capability of processing power, which is available on the phone. The question arises, how could we build up a new kind of network structure in which basically we try to leverage all this communication capability around us? And so, of course, this is what we've been trying to understand, and being able to understand how we could decentralize more and more decisions in terms of how mobile will be connected to the network.
Right. So smartphones can do local processing, but are there other ways to decentralize?
This is actually a major theme that Marwan and I talked about, and it's the focus of MFG. Remember, that's the system where you have a bunch of individual actors and not a top-down control system.
Okay, I see you bringing math back.
So Marwan and his collaborators did come up with a solution for decentralizing the system when there aren't too many agents, or phones in this case. It's called Aloha.
Like the Hawaiian phrase for hello and goodbye?
Yeah, because it's for phone calls. Get it?
Oh, I do.
I like the name.
Okay.
Anyways, it basically works like this. Anyone can try to make a call using a tower at any time. But suppose two people try to make a call at the same time. In that case, you call it a collision and it would jam up the tower. But Aloha is basically a rule to deal with the situation.
And if there's a collision, choose a random number. There's right. A waiting time. And then basically, hopefully, with that choice that you're going to make in the window of, let's say, 1 minute, normally you would not choose within 1 minute, if it's 60 seconds, the same number. And so you're not going to wait the same time and it's going to happen. So that's what I mean by that is that the kind of protocols that were built were mostly to cope with the fact that whenever it scales, you need to decentralize a lot of decisions that we're talking about.
Okay, so Aloha works in most situations, unless you have like a bunch of people trying to access the network at the same time, like say all trying to download like a show before a flight.
Yeah, something like that. So we're still trying to figure out how to create like a better decentralized algorithm, especially when you have that many people trying to get online and competing for those resources.
I mean, it seems though that like tech moves pretty quickly though.
Yeah, I thought that too, but Marwan set me straight when I asked him if we just needed, you know, better computer chips in our phones or some similar solution. He told me the answer wasn't faster chips, but better critical thinking.
I think we have stopped thinking. Because we can solve a lot of problems with brute force. I think we need to go back to how we can think more and compute less.
So he's saying that we basically can't expect to like brute force our way to a solution, but we have to you know, use math, I guess like MFG, to help find solutions.
Yeah. Turns out everything behind 5G and cell towers is a bunch of math and not the fun conspiracies about all the birds being fake robots or something.
Oh my God. I have a student who wore a birds aren't real hat to class and she told me all about it. And I secretly thought that she like actually believed this. And I was very confused and worried for a moment.
It's seriously one of my favorite joke Twitter conspiracies, but I wouldn't doubt someone out there actually believes it. And really, that's kind of our fault as scientists and researchers.
And I think the mystery is also done due to the fact that as researchers, scientists, we're so focused in progressing the things, we're not spending too much time also explaining to the people what we're doing and how we did it. And I think this is people see it as a burden, but I think it should be an exercise that each scientist should do in trying to explain in simple words the kind of inventions and progress they're doing.
So today we covered
what the G in 5G stands for, its generations.
And how we have more smart devices on the network competing for resources, and so we have to find clever ways to understand how they're all acting and competing.
And that's where we would use mean field games.
Yep. Using MFG, we can model how lots of individual agents, or phones in this case, will act and what they'll do in the network as a whole. Finally, though our phones are much smarter than they were in the 90s, we still need to think of ways to compute more cleverly and not expect to brute force it.
Work smarter, not harder, baby.
Yeah, I think that's a lesson we could all benefit from. All right. Don't forget to check out our show notes in the podcast description for more on Marwan's work and further resources on MFG. And be sure to check us out online at our homepage, mc.institute. We're also on Twitter at mc_institute, as well as Instagram at mc.institute. That's MC spelled I-M-S-I.
And do you have a burning math question? Maybe you have an idea for a story on how mathematics and statistics connect with the world around us? Send us an email with your idea.
You can send your feedback, ideas, and more to sadiewitt@mc.institute. That's S-A-D-I-E-W-I-T at I-M-S-I.institute.
We'd also like to thank our audio engineer, Tyler Dammy, for his production on the show. And music is from Blue Dot Sessions.
Lastly, Carry the Two is made possible by the Institute for Mathematical and Statistical Innovation, located on the gorgeous campus of the University of Chicago. We're also supported by the National Science Foundation and the University of Chicago. Until next time. Today's guest Today's guest experiment.
Also, I really wanted to say, and I have no idea how that net works.
Ba-dum.
Ba-dum.